Well, here we are, another South Sea Folk podcast, highlighting, you know, all the great stuff that we've got going on in this great city and town and all that. So, Lou, welcome again to another podcast. And you haven't been away anywhere this time.
No, I haven't been away. I've been really busy here at home. We've been doing loads of DIY things and then been working on the new website. So that will be coming next week.
Yes, I'm looking forward
really
to that.
Really excited. Yeah. And what's great for you, John, is you'll have a wonderful headshot on the podcast page and a bit more about us. And yeah, it's going to be really nice.
Fame at last.
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming, I must say, Lou, but that's good. and today we're going to talk about one of these, actually a rarity at the times that we're in at the moment, and that's a pub opening, because... We're seeing more and more that lots of these places. I mean, Portsmouth used to be just full of pubs, didn't it? It had the most, I think, in the country. But they're starting to close down. But this is a rarity and a brilliant, you know, a beam of light amongst all this, and that's a pub opening. And you were there a little while ago, weren't you?
Yeah, I went there about three or four weeks ago. We never get to go out much in an evening because obviously we've got Alfie and we live away from family and friends, but my son came down and he babysat, and me and my husband went out. We had a lovely evening, and before we did that evening, we'd sort of been down Old Portsmouth, had Little Potter, and we noticed it was open. And we said, we must go in there and sort of, you know, go and check it out. So it was lovely to pop in on that evening. And I met Mark and his wife.
And this is the we haven't even mentioned the name yet, have we? This is the Sally Port Inn that we went. Yeah. I went down yesterday and met Mark as well. So I think maybe now is a good time to bring him into the conversation. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you both?
Yeah, good.
Yeah. So I went along and we had a chat yesterday, Mark, and you've not been running a pub your whole life. You've had a very interesting journey to where you are now. So let everyone know what that journey was.
Yeah, no problem. Well, I think in short, every bloke I know wants to run their own bar so that they can sit around and drink with their mates every night.
Yeah.
But prior to that, I first moved to Portsmouth in 1985. I joined the Royal Navy as a junior mechanic and was indeed head toilet technician on my first ship at the age of 16 and a half.
So you were a stoker then, were you?
I was, yeah, JMEM2.
Ah.
Well, 16 and 2 days I was when I joined.
I was an MEML, so a greenie. In that. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, sorry to interrupt. Go on.
That's all right. After a couple of years, anyway, I joined the regulating branch and then had a fairly interesting career for the rest of my time. And I eventually left, picked up some injuries, things various, not particularly interesting, and had to sort of choose a second career. I suppose ready at the time to leave ordinarily anyway.
Yeah.
So the timing was right. So I thought if I leave now, I'm young enough to start a second career. And if I stay in, then I'm going to have to stick it out for the full 22 then think of something to do. So I left and took a job in working for a car financing operation, which I stayed with for about 10 years and eventually stepped out on my own with brilliant foresight just before the global financial crisis. And next couple of years was pretty difficult, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
As you can imagine. But persevered. And I suppose, you know, looking back, it's really easy to look back and pick out all the good points and gloss over all the things that didn't go quite right. But we were small enough, I suppose, to negotiate the problematical path, and eventually grew the company very rapidly. In 5 years, we'd obtained about 250 million in funding, and I employed 500 and something staff. Ooh. Won all sorts of accolades: British Entrepreneur of the Year, Sunday Times Fast Track 100 twice, Sunday Times Best Company to Work For, Institute of Directors, Director of the Year, EY Entrepreneur of the Year, you name it.
There was a big shelf that you're putting all these awards on.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at them now.
Ah. They're in my office. Nice.
select few get to come in here to see them. But so you know, and inevitably when you raise that sort of profile, people want to have chats with you about what's next. What started off as an initial investment conversation ended up into a full purchase of the business, or pretty much a full purchase of the business, nearly 6 years ago.
So this is the Sally Port.
This is the company I was running.
Obviously.
So
that from obviously it was a large company. It was a big sum of money. Changes your life. No two ways about it. So you can have a slightly more relaxed view of things, albeit you still have that urge to work and do something, just maybe something not as big or as stressful. So amongst other things, you know, I still live in Portsmouth. We live in a great zone. It's down on Spice Island. It's right on the water's edge.
Down there, isn't it?
You couldn't want for anything else. But I bought the Sallyport, turning it into a mini Ritz. That was my original plan. Have it as a really five-star hotel. Michelin star standard restaurant and a swanky bar. However, that didn't go according to plan. I couldn't persuade our planning committee at the Portsmouth Council that this would be a good thing, and they rejected the planning application. So the building sat empty for a number of years whilst I decided what to do with it, because it certainly wasn't possible to open it up as a hotel and restaurant in the current framework. So that was just a complete non-starter. And it was really a friend of a friend introduced me to Andrew from what is now Sally Antiques, but used to be the Antiques
Storehouse.
He was
based in the dockyard, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was just inside Victory Gate in the storehouse there. So we met up probably about this time last year and formulated a plan for him to move out of the naval base and into there, which involved me doing, you know, quite a lot of structural work and remedial work inside the building.
And you were talking before we started recording this. You were talking about what you found when you were doing that, because I came over yesterday and there was a huge beam over on the left hand side of where I was sat. Obviously, a lot of age, and you found that when you were doing the renovations. Tell us a bit about that.
So what I did is obviously over many years, bits have been added to it, and there's some lovely 1970s. Work and 1950s post Second World War work, which was, you know, maybe not done to the best aesthetic standards. So it all came out. So I literally stripped the building right back to the bare bones. So the original brickwork, the original stonework, and all the original wood beams. And like most buildings of its age around here, they were all timber framed, and they were all made from effectively wood from broken up warships.
Which is fascinating, isn't it?
So every bit of wood in there will have a big tale to tell, and has probably been around the world a few times and seen some action. And I don't think there is a way of telling exactly what bit of wood has come from what ship. But
I'm going to say, unless you've got a name on there or something on there.
Yeah, that's it. And, yeah. But it's fair to say a lot of it is very, very old, and much older than what was originally thought. So I think a lot of people were under the impression, and certainly you can trace record backs to the 1600s on the building. When actually it was the Oyster and Wine House in 1625.
In those days, old Portsmouth was maybe not the most salubrious place to wander around, was it?
Well, you certainly if you weren't careful, you were certainly signed up for some service.
Can I just say something, Mark? Because when I came into the pub, I mean, you know, people that haven't been in there yet, it's got so many artifacts from ships and to do with Navy and things. And what I loved is what I was saying to John, is that your knowledge around Portsmouth and the area. And one of the things that came up when we were sat in the pub was you were saying that the word geezer came from Portsmouth, practically a stone's throw away from the pub, didn't you?
Yeah, and I think it's just something that's been picked up over years as opposed to fact. But the founding, I suppose, founding person as Portsmouth as a town or city was a chap called John de Gisoire. But if you pronounce it directly into English, looks like geezer.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it has all come from. Another interesting point is not many people actually know the true origination of the term Pompey. I'm leaving that sort of pregnant pause there to see if you're going to come back to me with that.
I've got no idea. Come on, Mark, don't leave us in suspense.
Okay. So down on Spice Island, where the Spice Island Inn is, there's a channel marker. Which is called Portsmouth Point. And most people know that area of Spice Island as the point they refer to it as. But on a navigation map, it's abbreviated POM in apostrophes P, Pompey. Oh. So when in the olden days, Henry VIII's time and possibly before, possibly after, people would set a course for Pompey.
And that's where Pompey comes. How amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
That kind of fact.
But that's what I love about the pub as well, is that people coming into the pub, there's all the artifacts that you've collected, which you clearly see that passion for. And then you've got all this knowledge about the area and then the atmospheric feeling of the pub and the antiques upstairs. It's a really, really interesting place for people to come and have a drink, isn't it?
Yeah, and really what I wanted from the onset was to be able to step back in time. You know, you walk in there and you feel like you're in a 16th, 17th century inn.
Yeah.
Apart from some slightly modern chairs which are a bit more comfortable to sit on.
Well, you have to keep that. I mean, there's no sitting at the bar, is there, in the snug?
Not yet.
COVID, yeah, so that's to come. And we've spoken about Andrew as well and his antiques. Tell us a little bit about him. And Lou, I'd like to get this chap on a podcast as well. I think he'd be...
Definitely.
Oh, yeah, he's a fascinating character and almost as eccentric as I am. He comes with the territory. But there are probably some 20,000 individual items there, from ranging through the years. But it's just a really interesting attraction for people just to come and have a look, let alone be able to buy something, buy some fairly unique birthday and Christmas presents.
For a museum.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I want to a little boy because, I mean, it's just sort of, teaching them. I mean, he learnt quite a lot about World War II this year. But to actually go and show him in the flesh all these things.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great thing about, I always loved about history is being able to touch and feel stuff, not just see it in a picture or on the web. You know, it's there, it's the actual item. It's not something that looks like one of those items. It's the actual item.
Yeah. And I love the way he's split it into levels. So he's got three floors. So he's got the Militaria floor, well, I think it's the first one. And then you've got all the old toys, which I couldn't move away from there. That was all the stuff from my childhood. and then you've got the ceramics and everything. And it's, if you don't like one floor, you're going to like something on the other floor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some of the, again, going back to what I was saying, is like the actual item. There's a model of the Bismarck there. Which is the actual model from the film Sink the Bismarck.
It's not
a lookalike, it's the actual one.
Fascinating.
I think there's some amazing things in there. But something I wanted to really touch on, Mark, is the artifacts that you've got in the pub. So like when I was there with my husband, you were showing us a couple of things. So can you tell us a couple of things about the things, if somebody walks into the pub, some of the things that are around where they would be sitting and having a drink.
Okay, so around the whole sort of edges of the pub are some old oil lamps, which would have been whale oil originally used in them. They're 100 plus years old. They're all in perfect working order as well, obviously minus the whale oil.
Yes.
There's a British T-class submarine, which is quite large. It's about 8 foot long. As soon as you walk in,
where did that come from? Because that's obviously been made by I would say a well versed amateur, but where's who built it? Yeah.
I don't actually know, and is the honest answer. I think it's either one of two options. One is it's either an apprentice on the naval base, or it's an enthusiast. Somebody did suggest to me that it was made by a German prisoner of war, which I don't think it would be true, because it's made of aluminium, and aluminium would have been a very scarce commodity in those days.
What about the sea diving helmet? Because that's, as you walk in, that seems to hit you, one of the first things you see, and it the shine and how beautiful it looks, you know.
Yeah, so that's a Russian military diver's helmet. 1950s, and the reason why that's there is obviously the connection with Buster Crab.
So
I'm sparking some cells of memory there for you. So those that didn't know, the Sally Port Inn was actually the center of one of the world's biggest ever spy mysteries that nearly brought down the government in 1956, involving the disappearance of Commander Lionel Crabb, who was an MI6 officer and military diver.
Yeah.
Him and his partner in crime, a chap called, probably one of the best names I've ever come across, Maitland Pendlock, who also disappeared a year later, actually, in similar mysterious circumstances, but in Ireland. And this whole Crabb saga involved a cover-up by MI6 and the Admiralty, because this dive was unauthorized and in fact specifically told not to be done by Anthony Eden, who was the Prime Minister at the time. Buster Crabb never resurfaced from either his first or second or third dive attempt on the ship. And some days later, a headless and handless body was washed up on the beach.
Oh, really?
Which the Admiralty and MI6 claimed to be Crabb, but there is some doubt as to whether that is the case and whether it may have even been planted. Yeah. So the thing that's deepened the conspiracy theorists for this is the fact that the papers were due to be released in April 2006, and they were resealed for another 50 years. So we won't actually know what happens until 2056.
Wow, that's so fascinating.
So that this whole scandal attracted the world's press. So literally every country turned up at the Sally, media journalists turned up at the Sally Port in 1956. The guest registration book pages were torn out because MI6 clearly came down the following morning and emptied all of Crabb and Pendlock's possessions and denied all knowledge of them being there. A mysterious Mr. Smith, I think he's referred to.
This is crying out for a ghost of some kind.
Buster Crabb, you know, he was a Royal Navy commander. He was an MI6 operative and is indeed one of the principal characters where Ian Fleming got the idea of James Bond from.
And you know, one interesting fact
all started there.
Yeah, one interesting fact on this is I remember from my Navy days, anyone called Crab was called Buster.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah. So tell me about the, you know, on the wall at the back when I was there, I have to just say to listeners here that I had over a bottle of wine at this point. So I can't remember everything that you said.
Quality wine as well. It wasn't any
old wine. It was amazing wine. I have to say, go in there, whatever you have in there is so lovely. Port wine, it's all lovely. But on the wall, there was something about Robinson Crusoe. Is that right? That's correct.
So there's an indenture paper on the wall from HMS Weymouth, which is a ship that rescued from the Caribbean a chap called Alexander Selkirk, who was doing a return of service to the Royal Navy for his rescue after being marooned on a Caribbean island. Alexander Selkirk later died in Portsmouth, having risen to the rank of lieutenant, and I believe he died of yellow fever. But before he did, he went ashore, or the ship went ashore in Bristol, and he got drunk in a pub and recanted his story of how he was rescued, and the chap he recanted that story to was Daniel Defoe.
Amazing.
That is so
Yes,
I just love all these little stories in the pub.
Yeah, me too.
I think
me
that's
too.
What makes it a special place. I think you're really onto something with this, Mark. I think
when you look at the inside, it does have that feel of being in an old warship of pre-Nelsonic time.
Especially
with the exposed woodwork and the ribs all showing, and lots of maritime artifacts around. And
bring us all of them, Mark, because we'll have to have you back on, and also you have to have people come into you and say, we need more stories.
Well, there's one more big story going to come to the pub is, and it should. I'm hoping tomorrow may actually be the day when I get my first few bottles of it, it may not be till next week. So we actually own a brand called Portsmouth Gin.
Yeah.
Right.
And I have spent a few years now creating this gin with a chap called Dr. David Clutton. He's the world's number one gin aficionado.
Really? Excellent.
So I gave him the brief of, please give me a recipe and produce an outstanding gin that is likely to win lots of gold medals in a blind tasting contest, which is done. And we've now had the gin produced. So I've got the Portsmouth Distillery guys to produce it for me. So it's produced locally. It uses botanicals, which are sourced locally.
So we're recording this on the 29th of October. So you're hoping by this weekend then that you'll have that available in the pub. Is that right? Or
It's possible, although I would say with more certainty next weekend.
And what's lovely is the fact that you've worked with, because me and John both know Portsmouth Distillery. We know the guys there. We went and had a good tour around it, didn't we, John? And it's just lovely that you've worked with somebody local like that, because it's nice to collaborate and sort of support.
Yeah, and it's support local businesses. Real ales, we use Irving Brewery. I think their beers are amazing. They're multi award winning, and what's the point in selling everything that everybody knows that every other pub's got, because they're part of a big chain. And
you're a free house, aren't you?
We're a free house. So let's get some local stuff in, and it sells well. And,
so what's the future then, Mark? What have you got? What plans have you got?
Not sort of planning on doing some big expansion project. I'd like to consider myself semi-retired now.
Yes, that's a good point, isn't it? Yeah.
To do something really sort of, something that you're passionate about, that you can bring that into, when you get up every morning, even though you are, like you say, semi-retired, you get up and it doesn't feel like work because you're really enjoying what you're doing, aren't you?
Yes. I mean, going to work and sitting at a bar drinking with your mates, my
job. Such a hardship, I feel for you. Poor man.
So for anybody listening, Mark, because you're on Instagram now, so you're on as the Sally Portin.
Yeah.
But anybody listening that wants to pop down and have a good, look around the pub, when are you open?
So again, in the spirit of not wanting to work full time, we don't open Monday or Tuesday. And indeed, we don't open during the day. During the rest of the working week,
did and then cycle all the way over there in the pouring rain on a Tuesday.
Yes,
don't be like John.
Maybe consider checking the website first.
Possibly, that would be a good tip for our listeners. That'd be a muppet.
So you're open Wednesday to Sunday, and you just what time do you open in the evenings?
So it's apart from Friday, Wednesday and Thursday, four till ten.
Yeah.
Friday 3 till 10, slightly earlier on Friday, 12 till 10 Saturday, and 12 till only 6 on Sunday.
It's nice hours. And you're not doing food, it's just drink. It's about coming in for the atmosphere and the drink, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, and one thing I have noticed there is very few people are on their phones. When I go into some pubs, other pubs, that's what I love people watching, as I'm sure a lot of people do. And I would see two people together, both sat on their phone, taking no attention to each other whatsoever. We just don't get that in here. People are looking around and they're talking about things and generally enjoying life. And
well, I noticed that last night. There were two couples in there as well as myself, and they were chatting away, and you actually came along and were getting them to talk as well, weren't you, which is a rarity. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of what you do, isn't it? Really. I mean, nobody wants to be a faceless manager that can't be bothered to go and talk to people. But, yeah, and I like talking to people, find out where they're from and what they do and how they got there. And
but I love the fact that you live in Old Portsmouth. You know so much about the area, and it's like it to me. It has a real community feel to it. Mm. So when I was there, you know, there was a couple that came in that lived in, you know, around the corner. So it is that really nice little atmospheric community, like local pub, isn't it? That's the feel about it.
Yeah. We seem to be getting, you know, a lot of people that are travelling to Portsmouth are finding us on Google. We've seen, we've got quite a, you know, given the fact we've only been open for a few months, do have quite a high Google presence, and online presence.
That's quite important as well, isn't it? Because the thing is, when you go into Old Portsmouth, it's a beautiful place, but the Sallyport doesn't immediately stand out, does it? Because in a good way, because I think, you know, you've not got big flags out the front and huge signs and whatever. It's a nice.
Yeah, indeed. On the 4th of July, we didn't even announce we were opening to the wider world, because I didn't want to have that mad rush at the door and turn lots of people away. However, what happened on the 4th of July was we ended up being the opening news headlines on ITV Evening News.
So you didn't plan it, but it worked out that way anyway.
We didn't plan it, no. The choir from the cathedral opposite asked if they could sing the sea shanties as we opened for the first time, and which I agreed, but that was picked up very quickly by ITV, and they sent a commando raid of cameramen down, and we ended up being the opening headlines in the Evening News, which I suppose you can't get better advertising than that.
No, certainly not.
Definitely not.
Well, Mark, we'd love to have you back again, and there must be so many other stuff. I will certainly be down, especially when you have the Portsmouth Gin in there.
Yes.
And we'll get you back on and maybe get Andrew on as well, if he's up for that.
Definitely.
We should go down there, John, and have a
yes.
We keep saying me, you and my husband and Rachel will go down and have a South Sea evening. I think
that'd be a wonderful
idea. maybe pop down next week during the day when I've got the Portsmouth Gin in.
You can have
a private tester.
We'd love that. Oh my goodness,
we are. Well, thank you so much, Mark. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you, and it's so nice to see a business opening up, or a pub opening up rather than shutting down. So congratulations.
Thank you. And if we just talk about the Instagram, so the best way for people to find you, Mark, is on Instagram.
It's our website. Yeah, on Instagram is the Sallyport, or just put in Google Sallyport. It will find it.
Lovely. Oh, great. Thank you.
Excellent. Aaron, best of luck, and we will be down there, Lou, in force. Four of us down there testing out the Portsmouth Gin.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Cheers.
See you.
Take care.
Thanks, bye.
Bye.